Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Hey, my friends, welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, performance enhancement expert, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 46 countries, such as the U.S., India, Belgium, Canada, France, Australia, Panama. So thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformations. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing, highlighting the transformational moments that have changed our lives, and how we use these to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. Now, you can listen to us every Wednesday and on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. However, look out for the Tuesday and Thursday episodes because those are book launches, product launches, events that people are promoting, and I have amazing guests that come on to promote something amazing that they're creating. If you don't want to miss an episode, subscribe wherever you're listening to right now, whether it be the Blog Talk Radio website, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, the Google Play Music app. Subscribe wherever it fits for you. So I don't want you to miss an episode. Join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and you can interact with the guests, and it's a great, great community. On the show, I have impactful and amazing guests that are impacting everyone around them, and my guest today will not disappoint. If you have any questions for myself or any of my guests that I bring on the show, this is a live show, so you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. So please help me welcome to the show, Michael Levette. What is up, brother?
Hello, Sean, and hello, everybody. Great to be with you today.
Man, we connected on a level, man, at New Media Summit last year in San Diego, the podcasting conference that Steve Ulsher put on. And, dude, I am blown away at your story. Like, even before the event was over, I'm like, I must have you on my show. So here we are.
I know. It's great. I've been looking forward to this for a long, long time. And I love sharing my story because it's an interesting one, to say the least.
Dude, I love the wow moments. I love when you're telling somebody a story and they go, wait, what? I probably did that like two or three times when you were telling me about everything. I was like, hold on, what? Like, I got to know more. Like, you know what I mean? It's so intriguing and it's so like, I'm like, wait, a year? Like a solid, like, was it like, you know, a year's worth wrapped into like 5 years? Like, no, it was like a solid like year. So man, I cannot wait for everybody to hear your story and just like how incredible. God, man. So if you're ready, I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Let's do this. The title of this episode is How to Survive a Year of Worst Case Scenarios with Michael Levette. Michael is a CEO and boundaries advisor for Breakfast Leadership Incorporated. He brings people back to life as an author and inspirational speaker, focused on helping individuals and leaders within corporations relearn boundaries in their work and personal lives so that they can accomplish more by doing less, which will actually save their careers and possibly their lives. Michael lost his health, his job, his car, and his home all in the matter of 369 days. Michael teaches people on how that happened to him so that they can make the crucial changes in their lives to prevent those losses from happening to them. Michael's book, 369 Days, How to Survive a Year of Worst Case Scenarios, chronicles his year of transformation, describing losing his health, his job, car, and home, and then reinventing his life and how to rebound from those losses to come out of those experiences stronger than ever. You can connect with Michael on Twitter. His website is breakfastleadership.com. His Facebook is facebook.com/BeFastLeadership. Instagram, his podcast, Be Fast Podcast, his book, all of your things, all there, right there in the show notes as you can see him. So please connect with him. So, dude, man, my first question, man, like, why? Like, why Breakfast Leadership? Why become a speaker and an author? Like, what is your big, deep why?
My big, deep why is throughout those experiences that you chronicled, and we'll go into details on that momentarily. After going through all of those things and reinventing myself and having the life that I want to have and doing things that I want to do, I started noticing way too many of my colleagues, not just in the industry that I'm working in, but in every industry that I've come across, were going down the same path that I did that led up to those 369 days. And it scared me. And I realized there was something that I needed to do. And it came to me, you know, it's like, okay, after you survive all of those things, okay, there's obviously a purpose on why I'm still here and why I'm able to do the things that I need to do. So the Breakfast Leadership side of things came along when I see too many leaders that just go into work and they just really put themselves into it. And they're working 12, 16 hour days. They're missing out on their kids, everything. But I find that the Breakfast Leadership component of it is if you can catch a leader or a manager first thing in the morning before they go into the office and get their attention, then you have a chance to help them redesign their life, redesign how they approach work, redesign everything that they do so they can avoid your worst case scenarios.
That's awesome, man. I love that. So before those 369 days, who was Michael? I mean, talk about a typical day. You know, what was your life like? You know, like, take us down who you were before that year from hell.
In 2007, I was hired as an executive director for a new medical clinic in the town that I was living in, just outside of Windsor, Ontario. My background, I'm a dual citizen, American born, and I've been living in Canada since 2004.
Oh, wow.
So, that's very convenient in a lot of ways. In 2007, I was hired for this new role, and it was a startup organization. I was employee number one, and I was responsible for hiring all of the staff, recruiting physicians, navigating a clinic site relocation 6 weeks before it absolutely positively had to open, and really engage the community to figure out, okay, what is this clinic about and why should we go to you instead of the walk-in clinic or, you know, maybe the urgent care center or something like that. So a lot of time over 2007 until 2009, I was working a ton of hours. I was checking email from 6 a.m. in the morning to 11 p.m. at night, 7 days a week.
Wow, no way.
Because I was getting email at 6 a.m. in the morning and 11 p.m. at night. It was, you know, for those that are an entrepreneur or a startup type of thing, they know that that can happen. But I was constantly connected. I did not shut off and built the organization, recruited the physicians and the staff, and things were going pretty well. And then in the fall of 2008, the board of directors that I reported to noticed that I was a little bit irritable, and basically I didn't recognize it at the time because I didn't really understand what was going on. I was fully fledged burned out. I just was a wreck, irritable with people and just was not enjoying life. So the board said, you're taking a week off, and they gave me a week off with pay, not vacation time or anything like that. And I remember going to the library, and I loved to read earlier in my life, but I had stopped reading books for pleasure several years prior to that. So I thought, you know what, that's something I do. I know I used to love doing that, so let's go to the library, let's grab a book, and just sit down and read. I grabbed a book off the shelf. I don't remember which one it was. Mm-hmm. I sat down in a chair at the library, and I couldn't relax myself enough to read.
Wow.
I was that wound. And so after about 10 minutes of trying to do that, I thought, this is just a complete waste of time. So I put the book back and I left. Then I went back to work and things went about their merry way. And then in May of 2009, I was mowing my lawn and I felt a little pressure in my chest, like I pulled a muscle because I had an electric mower and the thing was heavy. So mm-hmm. it didn't really turn real well. So I thought I pulled a muscle. And so I continued mowing, no big deal. And then over the next few days, anytime that I lifted anything with my right hand or my right arm, I felt that pressure again. So I thought, okay, I really right. pulled a muscle bad. Come Friday morning, that pain was pretty consistent. And thankfully, I was working in a medical clinic that had a portable EKG unit in it. So I was talking to the family doctor there, and I said, you know, I've had this discomfort in my chest. I feel like I pulled a muscle or something a few days ago, but it's bugging me more today. So he listened. He said, mm-hmm. you know what? Let's hook you up and see. It's probably nothing, but we'll just run a test. So they ran the test. They looked at the results. They were quite perplexed. So they disconnected everything and reconnected everything and ran the test again, and the same results came by. So they took the information and they faxed it to a cardiologist at one of the hospitals in Windsor. Okay. And about five minutes later, Dr. Gina, who was the cardiologist, called and told the doctor, tell Michael to get his ass in the hospital right now.
Wow.
And then he called back 2 minutes later and he said, he cannot drive to the hospital. So I got a ride to the hospital and spent a week there.
A week?
I had a week. Yeah. Here's one of the challenges, and I know you have listeners all across the globe, but one of the challenges of the Canadian healthcare system, which is not free, we have 13% sales tax, so it's not free. But one of the challenges is just numbers. We don't have as many cardiologists or specialists or anything like that
right.
that you would see in the States. So I went in on Friday. I got a room Friday night. On the weekends, the cardiologists weren't there to do any type of angiograms or basically go in and take a look and see what's going on inside the heart. So the earliest they could do it was Monday. So I was hooked up to an IV and was comfortable and was relaxing, and everybody around me wasn't relaxing, but I was actually in pretty good spirits, surprisingly, you know, and knowing All what right. I thought I knew. So Monday comes along. There was a backlog of people that needed to have the procedure, and I was 40 at the time, so I was stable and not really showing any indication of anything really dramatic. So the people that were a little bit more critical as far as heart ailments went ahead of me. So finally, they went in and took a look on Tuesday, and they found two blockages in my left anterior descending artery. Now, that artery is nicknamed the Widowmaker because typically when people have a blockage in that artery, they tend to die.
Yeah.
Oh, recently,
wow.
We just
What was that artery called again?
It's the left anterior descending artery. Ironically, Kevin Smith, you know, the actor, Mallrats and Clerks and all that, heart attack,
okay.
he had blockages in his left anterior descending artery. So it's people are surviving it a little bit more because we catch it early enough. And thankfully in my situation, we did. So one of the challenges again with the Canadian healthcare system is the cardiologist that went in and found the blockages was not licensed to actually put in stents to open up the arteries. That had to be another cardiologist, and he wasn't going to be into the hospital until the next day. So they went in twice, and which was uncomfortable to say the least, because the next day they went in and they put the two stents in, and probably one of the most painful things I ever felt, because I was awake for the procedures. They didn't put me under. So I was actually able to watch and see, you know, where the blockages were in the artery, which is kind of surreal if you think about it. You're laying on a bed and you're seeing this little cord going inside your heart moving around. You're like, oh, this is kind of scary. But the biggest thing I remember from being in the hospital that week was when they went in and did the first procedure, they knew they had to go back in the next day and put in the stent. So they didn't want the, you know, where they went in my groin area to seal up. So they had to seal it in such a way where it would seal but not completely seal. And the way that they were able to get that done was they had to, you know, keep pressure on it for it to seal. And how the way that they had to keep pressure on it was basically they used a vice grip and they viced me to a bed for 7 hours.
Wait. Time out. So this vice grip is in your groin area.
It is holding me to the bed. I'm laying flat on my back and I'm vice gripped to that bed for 7 hours.
Oh,
and
my
you'd be surprised how strong a vice grip can be, because I couldn't move. You know, you think, oh, you could turn a little bit. No, I wasn't moving.
My God.
Yeah. So when you're laying there for 7 hours and you're going, okay, they're going back in tomorrow and they're going to put in these stents, you realize, okay, I'm going to make sure that whatever got me into this situation, I'm not getting back into this situation again. Whatever
Seriously.
It is, I'm not doing it. So the next day they went in, they put in the stents, and then I came home the next day. And I was off of work for 17 weeks. So I was able to recover. During that time, my employer at the time decided that they wanted to have somebody else lead the organization. Now, there was some mistakes that I made. You know, I'm not going to go into details. And I'm not going to debate whether or not I should have lost my job. But after my 17 weeks were over and I got cleared to return to work, I was returned a box of my belongings that was at the office. So here you go, 17
no
weeks.
No way.
Yeah. So here I am, 17 weeks from having a heart attack where, quite frankly, I probably should have died but didn't, and to losing a job. Now, let's remind everybody, this was 2009, so we were still on the tail end of that little recession that we had in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody remembers those good times. People were losing their houses left and right, jobs, the mortgage crisis, financial crisis, everything.
Sure.
So Windsor is a neighboring town to Detroit. And if you recall, the government bailed out the auto sector. Yeah, same here. So, you know, the challenge is when the auto sector, especially in that region, is doing poorly, it impacts everything. So the auto sector was being bailed out by the government to keep them alive.
Mm-hmm.
So the jobs were nowhere to be found. So it took me from October of 2009 until March of 2010 to find a job. And it ended up being I had to relocate to Toronto. So left the area where family and friends and all that community of, you know, a couple hundred thousand to the greater Toronto area has about 7 million people in it. Slightly different. Yeah, it's packed. Now, I used to work in Chicago, so I wasn't allergic to, you know, big cities or things like that. So it wasn't a case where it was going to be traumatic, but I never really thought that I would be back working in a big city again. So thankfully I found the job.
Sure.
And I was in the job for about 6 weeks and looking for places for the family to look or to move to, because they were still down in the Windsor area and I was commuting from Toronto back to Windsor on the weekends. And I was in a meeting and then my phone rang and it was my daughter, my oldest daughter, and she was crying uncontrollably. And then finally, when we were able to get her composed, she said, they took the car. And I'm like, who, what? What are you talking about? And she said, they took the car. And I finally got out of her that the bank was tired of us not being able to make the payments. So, you know, they exercised their right to repossess the family vehicle.
Oh.
So.
No way.
Now, of all the experiences, that I would probably say that was probably the most frustrating one for me, because I was 4 hours away and there was nothing I could do. You know, my children had to see something like that and experience that. It's bad enough, you know, they saw their dad have a heart attack, but now all of a sudden it's like, you know, the family vehicle is being towed away, and pretty devastating lesson for them. And they were little at the time too. You know, they were 9, 6, and 5. So real young. But, you know, thankfully we had another vehicle that was paid off. So we, you know, were able to be a one vehicle family. So you go through those things and you're like, okay. And then a few weeks later, we finally found a place to rent in Toronto that would work out for us, relatively close to where my new job was. So we went through what I call the most painful experience any human being can experience, and that's called moving. because
you're not joking.
Well, luckily,
you have people that move you, that's probably the best part about it, you know. But see, here's what happens, okay? So they come. They throw everything in a box, and you're watching people take things literally because they're not their stuff, right? And these movers, like 4 or 5 of them, come in and they literally just run their arm across your desk and just dump everything into a box. Like nothing's organized. Like everything's just thrown in there, literally thrown into a box. Like they tear apart your beds, they tear apart everything they can to get into this crate, and then it's shipped to your next duty station. When the duty station, when you get there, you unpack it by them doing the reverse. So, like, they throw all of the boxes in one room. They put all of the beds in the rooms that they're supposed to go into. They assemble the beds, and then that's it. You have to then unpack all of the boxes. They give you a shipping list. You have to try to figure out the chicken scratch from the last guy. These movers hate the last movers. You know, like, it's like, oh, my God. Like, when you, hey, you're going to transfer, you're like, just kill me now. Like, this is ridiculous. Yeah, it sucks, man. Yep. I know your pain.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't, you know, start shaking if I see a U-Haul truck anymore, but I still look at it and just kind of grimace at it a bit. But so we got the move done. So we, you know, moved everything up. And then as we were setting things up in the new place in Toronto, we discovered that we forgot the ladder for our daughter's bunk bed. Now, I was going back. Yeah, I know. It's not exactly you can go run to Walmart and just buy a new one.
Yeah, I was just saying, it's not like you just come and get one.
No, they're pretty much, you know, unique for every bed you have. So yeah, I was going back to the Detroit area in a couple of weeks to go visit my brother who lives in the Detroit area. And then I was going to swing back by the house and grab the ladder, anything else that we may have forgotten, you know, in the move. We pretty much thought we had everything, but for some reason that got moved somewhere and we didn't grab it. So I visited my brother and then I went back to the house to grab the ladder. And I went up to the front door and I opened up the screen door and I saw the largest padlock I've ever seen in my life. And a sign on the door that says foreclosure. And I looked at the sign and I'm holding the screen door open. And at that moment, to this day, was the greatest level of peace I have ever felt.
Why?
Because I knew at that point everything that I could have possibly lost was lost and done and over with. And I was standing there healthy in a vehicle. I had a job in Toronto, home in Toronto. So everything I needed was taken care of. And I could hear the breeze blowing and there was birds chirping. It was a really quiet day in that neighborhood. It was just such a serene moment. And I know that is not the reaction I would see if I went to my house and saw a big padlock on the door going, yeah, you can't go in there anymore. It provided closure and for me, and it was going to go on the market the following week because we had, even in the time when I had, you know, the new job and trying to get things built up and started paying off bills and everything we could, you know, we were doing everything we could to bootstrap, just kind of tweaking the house and repairing whatever needed to be repaired so we could sell it. So it was ready to sell. It was ready to go on the market. Probably, you know, one of the few houses that would go into foreclosure that they say, yeah, it's move-in ready. Because I know in some situations they're not. But in that situation, whoever got the house got a house that was ready to move in without any issues that I was aware of. So that was my 369 days. I know a lot of people go through losses in life, you know, health, or, you know, they lose their job, or, you know, the other real bad ones, you know, having your car taken away or a home foreclosure. Those are pretty devastating losses all on their own.
Right.
But I decided let's just get them all over with in a year. And then that way it's done and over with. Let's not drag things on. But that's not, it just happened that way. But, you know, that's how I tell people. It's like, you know, I just didn't want to have it, you know, screw around with it for that long. I just want to get it done and over with. That way I can move on to do whatever I need to do. But yeah, so there's that. So that's where things happen. And after all of those things transpired, you know, I realized, okay, I'm still here and I've got a new job, ironically in the same field, which my parents thought I was absolutely nuts to go back into a field that nearly killed me. But I thought, no, I'm going to go about this differently. I'm going to approach things differently. And
right,
you know, through a lot of studying and reading leadership books and time management books and how to work with people, how to delegate, all of these things, you know, over the last 8+ years, you know, I've developed a lot of systems that I use personally and of course share with others.
Nice.
On how to approach life, especially if you're in a leadership role, because oftentimes what happens is people get promoted into leadership roles, but they have not been given any training on how to be a leader. If you go up in the ranks and you've been doing, you know, in military, you've been out in the field doing, you know, doing everything you do, and all of a sudden you get, you know, promoted, and all of a sudden you're going up in the ranks, and now you're kind of behind the scenes, you're behind the lines, and you have other people doing things for you.
Yeah.
There's often not a lot of training to prepare you for that. You've been so built on doing things and getting your hands dirty on stuff. So when you're in a leadership role, you're not necessarily supposed to be doing that all the time. You should be working on things that only you can be working on and let other people do the things that they're good at. So that was a big lesson for me to learn throughout all of that, was, you know, the fine art of delegation and really getting down to the point of only working on the things that I should be working on.
Awesome. I love that. So would you say that that was exactly what your transformational moment was? Was that realization right there? What was that transformational moment that put you on the path to what you do now?
A big component of it was, you know, closing that screen door at the house and saying, okay, the old version of me is gone.
Yeah.
I have no ties to it anymore. Now I'm in Toronto, which I've been here since 2010. You know, my career has been great. I've launched a business, podcast, the book, which we'll talk about in a second. All of these things came into effect because I chose to be a person of action and a person to say, okay, let's start doing things to help people. Now, I've always been someone that was giving and helpful of others, but as we discovered, I was giving from a tank that was getting emptier and emptier, and finally got to the point where
right,
there was nothing in that tank. Now,
right,
you know, it's selfish, but it's like I make sure that I am fully functioning and I'm taking care of myself first. Then that way, when I give, I'm giving the best. It's full on. It's like, here I am. Let's do this. Because if they're getting a half of me, then they're not getting everything that they could benefit from. And that, again,
right,
that takes time. It wasn't an overnight thing, but I knew that you're not going to change 40 years of behavior in a night. But I realized that the things that led to all of those things, I was responsible for. Was I completely to blame for it? No, but I was responsible for it. I was the common denominator, all of those things. It was me.
Yeah.
You know, I made the choices
right.
that got me to burnout and the health and poor choices and everything else. So I realized, okay, well, I need to be smarter in what I do and take some time and really get down to what is important for me to work on. What can I do? How can I make a contribution? And how can I help others avoid going through just one of those dominoes, not all four of them?
Sure.
If anybody ever goes through that, I can definitely relate.
Yeah, I'd say so. So talk about the book, man. What prompted you to write the book? What's the book about? Talk about that.
The book, 369 Days, How to Survive Your Worst Case Scenarios, chronicles my 369 days. You know, there's a little intro in there about growing up in Pontiac, Michigan, and then moving to Waterford, and, you know, the experiences, you know, just kind of not a lot. I mean, I didn't want it to be an autobiography. Would talk about the things that happened and what was going on when those things happened. And for me, it wasn't necessarily a case of me writing this book to, be immensely rich, but hey, if it happens, I'm not going to complain. But more so on a level of, okay, this is what happened. This is how I got through it. Each of those losses, for many people, could be very, very defeating. And they could have really wanted to crawl under a rock and said, I give up. I never had that. I always had the mentality of, okay, I've survived that. Brush myself off. Let's get back up. What do I need to do to get better or to get a job or get money to pay our bills, to find a place, all those things. You get yourself back in the game and you just keep at it. And that's been my driving force. It's one of those things for people that are understanding of what Detroit is like. Detroit is one of those cities where got time and now they're rebounding, and it's kind of a Midwesterner's way is just, you know, get back up. It's like, okay, yeah, I got knocked down. Okay, now I'm going to get back up and let's get back into it and not worry about woe is me, I'm a victim or anything like that. I don't have any time for that in my life, and that's not how I operate. And everyone has choices. I could have easily chose to go down that path, and who knows where I would be if I would have. But I knew that there was things that needed to be done, and I took advantage of the opportunities that came my way and made the best of every situation I could.
I love it. So what are you doing now, man?
What I'm doing now is, you know, I launched Breakfast Leadership, which is an organization that works with corporations and individuals as well. It's amazing, you know, the type of people that reach out to me for a variety of things, anywhere from these leaders that are working those 16, 18-hour days, and they hate their life. They want to quit their job, as does the majority of people, I think. Everybody seems to want to quit their job. But my argument to that is, you switch to a new job, and guess what? In a couple of years, you're going to be in the same boat that you are in right now. You're not going to like your job because how you approach your work is probably a component of why you don't like your job. Now, many of us are entrepreneurs, and we want to be our own boss and turn in our 9-to-5 so we can work that 9-to-9 shift again. Because that's what entrepreneurs are, kids. We're not a, you know, 2-hour-a-day type of thing. Don't believe the Facebook videos. But even if you look at the ones that are doing really, really well, the entrepreneurs, they're working some long hours because they want it to sustain and grow. And that's fine. But if you ask them, they're loving their life and they're doing what they want to do. And at the end of the day, I think that's where we all want to be.
Oh, absolutely.
But I love
fulfilled. So definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I work with, you know, the leaders to deal with that. I've I've dealt with some people that are struggling with boundaries, even with their children and doing homework of all things. But, you know, it helps when you have teenagers, you get experience in that homework right. challenge. And I recall, you know, what I was like when I was a teenager as well. So it,
yeah,
but it all boils down to a lot of people get themselves into situations because they didn't protect their own self-interest when they said yes to doing something or taking on those additional tasks and responsibilities at work, where one of the challenges is if you're really good at something, especially with the way organizations are now, they're a lot leaner than they were even 10 years ago.
Yep.
If you're really good at something, it's great, but then you're going to probably be really good at other things because they're going to keep giving it to you because you're able to successfully turn things around. And it can really create some problems and really get you rapidly approaching a burnout state and stress and everything else. And once those elements are there, then there's always the possibility of health issues, fatigue, family issues, you name it. We see it every day in every industry. People are burning out and they're stressed out, and it's like there's a better way to go about this. It's just really
yep.
honing in on how you spend your time, working on the things that only you should be working on, having a work balance, a work-life harmony of
right.
working and living. You're one person. You shouldn't be two people. You should be one.
Definitely.
Your work that you are at home. Because in that way, you're not trying to put on a mask or something else. You are who you are. And if you do that, then your life tends to flow a lot better. And that's one of the things that yep. I work with people on, is really getting an understanding of how they flow. Because I could easily say, okay, here's this checklist, fill out these things, follow steps 1 through 10, and your life will be great. Maybe.
There you go.
Need to have an understanding of what their life is like and the choices they're making and the responsibilities they have. And you mm-hmm. massage it to the point where they can get back some time. And I think ultimately that's what people want. They want their time back. They want some time
yeah.
to be able to go to that sporting event or that last second, I got second row seats to insert name of concert here. And you're like, yeah, I can go. Or no, I can't because I've got this project due tomorrow morning. Yeah, I'm tired of missing out on those events. So that's what's
yeah,
keeping me
so,
busy.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, so time and money are two things that people willingly will never give up. Like, no one gives up their time unless they're going to get something back. No one gives up their money. Unless, if you're listening right now and you want to give me and Michael $50, that'd be amazing. Give you
yep.
by PayPal link.
Yep.
Send it right in,
yep.
you know, to PayPal.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, no one,
it's
just, it's time and money to do this, but we never give up.
And the beautiful thing, too, is if it's $50 US, it converts to about $65 Canadian. So it's great.
Awesome.
It's
awesome.
It's great when the U.S. money's coming here. When I go to the States and use my Canadian salary, it's like, ooh, wait a minute. That exchange rate is not too favorable right now. But, hey,
yeah.
it is what it is.
Yeah. So, you know, so if anybody's listening, right, you call in 657-383-1109. We're taking your calls. I have a team standing by. 657-383-1109. If you have any questions for myself or Michael, if something he said resonated with you, definitely let us know. Because I mean, you never know what people are carrying around. You never know what people are struggling with. Even though they've put a smile on their face, you know, they're still struggling. They're still battling. They're still carrying things with them. So my question for you is, if you had to start all over again, you lost the house, lost the car, lost the job, lost, you know, whatever, right? What would be the first thing that you would do this time around?
The first time around to reinvent
like
myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
to basically.
Around.
Yeah. So this time around, I have to look at how I'm spending my time. making sure that I'm getting plenty of sleep. make sure that I'm. Yeah, I know that's. It sounds simple, but if you're not getting restful sleep because you're stressing out about work or life or anything like that, you're not resting. So your body is not getting the opportunity to basically rebuild itself. So you can go on and do the things day after day after day. And while I was sleeping, my sleep quality wasn't that good from what I recall. Until they put me on the heart medication, then I slept like a baby. It worked out well for sure. But that would be the one thing, is really just see how you spend your time. And the easiest way to do that is, as tedious as it is literally write down what you're doing throughout the day. Just keep a journal of time of day, what you're working on. And one of the exercises that I have people track their energy level throughout the day. So if they're working...
Say that again. One of the things that you do is you what?
I'm sorry, what's that?
We do have people
keep track of all their activities during the day and throughout the day to see, you know, are they and really things doing tasks when the energy level need are not in alignment. If they can, my two items, but you know, two or three of the most important things that really, and then everything else, whether it's meetings, podcast interviews, radio interviews. Oftentimes those work better in the afternoon and evening, because my energy level is good for those things. But if I had to, you know, start putting together a project plan for something next week, I'd rather work on it when I have coffee instead of, you know, right now.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yep.
So, I really want to know, and that's a great, you brought up a lot of good points. Definitely brought up a lot of good points. Who's been your influencers through this whole thing? I mean, you know, there's the Gary V's and Grant Cardone's, everybody's like, oh my God, that's who I follow. And cool, got it. That's awesome. But, like, there's other people as well, like family members or whatever, friends, peers, you know, other people that we hung out with, you know what I mean? So I'm curious, you know, whether they're famous or not, or we know them or not, you know, who, you know, and you don't have to say names if you don't want to, but I'm always curious about people's influencers, like who they follow, what do they read?
Well, during that time, and even a little bit before that, I would say probably some of the influencers would be Michael Hyatt, who is the CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishing. Now he's got his own organization that is quite successful. You know, a lot of leadership tips and, you know, balancing family things, because he had a smaller health scare, you know, years and years ago, and he realized, okay, I've got too much to lose and nothing to gain unless I start changing some things. So he was a huge influence. Dr. John Maxwell, his leadership books are, you know, stand on their own as being excellent books. My mom and dad, and because, you know, they worked very hard. And, you know, they do everything for people and love, you know, very giving, very caring, you know, worked some crazy hours. My dad worked at General Motors, so he, you know, had the early morning shift, so got up at an ungodly hour every day to go work to provide for my brother and myself and my mom. And they went through, and, you know, they didn't have an easy life growing up and challenges and whatnot, but they persevered and they were able to just, you know, they've just recently celebrated their 52nd wedding anniversary. So they're doing something right. Yeah, they're doing something right. And they still love each other, and they're still agitated with each other, too. So it's a beautiful balance. It works well for them. But those are some people that just people in general that overcome things. And we see it a lot. You know, those people that have, gone through some pretty crappy situations in life, and you could name whatever situation it is.
Sure.
And they've gone through it, and they came out of it, and they're better for it. Now, everyone, I wouldn't wish, that my 369 days happened, but I will tell you this, I would not be who I am if it didn't happen. Who knows? I may not even be here. Because who's to say that I wouldn't have noticed that pulled muscle and just would have continued on my business, and then the arteries would have been completely blocked and then be done. Those are people that inspire me, and I see that every day. And, whether it's famous people that, started off sleeping in their car and now, they've got their own private jets and I don't look at that. I don't look at that as saying, okay, that's an end goal career aspiration of mine, is to have my own private jet. That's not me. If it happens and I absolutely positively need it, we'll deal with that if that happens. But for me, freedom and flexibility to be able to live your life on your terms and do the things that you like to do when you want to do them, where you want to do them, that's the freedom. That's the time back. And the ability to do the things you like to do, that's worth more to me than money. Because when you go through 369 days, you kind of lose everything. So after you lose things like that and you lose everything, stuff doesn't act as important as it used to.
Yep.
I don't get worked up over things. I have the things in my life that I need that are beneficial to me. Yes, there's a couple things here and there that I like, that I want, and you get them, and everything's great, but I don't have a house full of things like I used to, because I don't need them. They didn't really serve me.
Right. Yeah, man. So my house burned down in 2007, I pretty much lost everything. My car was in the driveway. I had a Volkswagen Jetta VR6, man. It was dropped. Rims, tires, raced out, man. It was a beautiful car. This was back in 2007. The car was the 2000, and it still had like 60,000, maybe not even 60,000 miles on it, on a 7-year-old car. I mean, I babied this car. And
wow.
The fire was so hot when my car was in the driveway. The fire was so hot that it melted my mirrors on the outside of the car. The back side of the mirror,
wow.
Was
yeah, those fires can get hot.
Like, yeah, dude. I'm sitting here looking at my car. I'm just like, this is crazy. Like, my whole life is literally up in flames. It was like, oh, I crashed and burned, my life went up in flames. Like, no, mine literally did. Like, they literally did. So I'm just, I'm just not, I don't look at things the same way after that. I don't need the newest shoes or the newest hat or the newest shirt or, like, I collect moments. I collect memories. I'm not in it for the money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I make enough to survive. I make enough to be comfortable. But I know that people that are in my mastermind, and you're still right. I mean, you make a good point about you assess your life in those moments. You know what I mean? Like, you're sitting there, like, on your doorstep, looking at this house going, that's it. That's the last thing. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm free. You know what I mean? So it's almost like, every once in a while, man, just reset. Like, go take a vacation, take a step away, right? And and really assess your life, And
yeah, it's like we've become a society that likes things and tends to get things pretty instantly. We go to the drive-through window, we order the number 3 with the Coke, we drive around the corner, we pay for it, and they hand it to us. And that's not how life really is. There's things that take time, and there's things that's really, really hard to get to do. And the challenge is, oftentimes we're like, this is hard work. It's like, but if you stick to it, the results will come if you're doing the right thing, and it's going to take time. If it was easy, then everyone would do it. But it's not. There's a lot of things in life that are difficult. Reinventing yourself is not an easy task. There's some deeply rooted habits that you have to change. And again, not overnight, but understanding and remembering, you know, those moments of, you know, losing everything or being vice grip to a bed or all these challenges, you go, okay, yeah, I don't want to do that again. Okay, what do I need to do to get through this? And you just, you press on and you make the changes that you need to make and you get guidance and help from those that you know, like, and trust, and you keep your eyes open for opportunities, and that's what happens. You keep your eyes and ears open, and you present yourself in those situations. That's when things happen.
There you go. So I'm curious, man, like, where are you headed now? What kind of new adventures, businesses, family? You know, where are you headed now?
Right now, I mean, the big focus right now is just, you know, getting the additional client work through Breakfast Leadership. You know, my background, you know, in the last decade or so has been in healthcare. So spending a lot of time communicating with healthcare executives, because we're seeing, not just in Canada, but definitely in the United States, we're seeing, you know, just catastrophic levels of physician burnout, clinical nurse bullying. I'm actually speaking at the Becker's conference in Chicago in May on nurse bullying, because it's a situation where we need to address this, because, you know, you're sick, you have to go to the hospital for something. You want somebody to be there to be able to take care of you. And the people that are working those crazy hours, those long shifts, you know, night, weekend shifts, you know, overnight shifts and all of that, we need to make sure as a society that we're protecting those people so they too can have that work-life harmony and not burn out. Because if we start losing physicians and nurses, who's going to help us when we, and that's the same case with any type of leadership role. If your leader is living a healthy life, and they've got boundaries and how they spend their time and their work and all of that stuff, that trickles down all the way down to the organization. You see less cases of burnout and stress in organizations if the leader is living the life of, okay, don't check emails at night and weekends. When, you know, it's not critical. Work on the stuff when you're at work. When you're at home, do whatever you want to do. Getting organizations to do that. I use the analogy, of course, because my dad worked at GM. It's like you're working on the line and you're putting in parts into the vehicle. So same part in the vehicle throughout your 8-hour shift and all of that. You go home, you have dinner, you're watching television, doing whatever you do to relax and unwind from the day. You're not going to get a phone call and say, okay, we need you to start putting more parts in. No, it's going to wait till the next day when your next shift comes in. So in a manufacturing, you can only work on those things when you're at the plant. You're not going to be able to take home that Camaro and start putting it together, although, hey, that wouldn't be a bad thing, I guess, to do if you get to keep it. But at the end of the day, that's how that environment works. Somehow in the office things and instant messaging and texts and emails and constant access, we got into this thing where we're, for some reason, all operating like we're emergency room doctors constantly on call, and the majority of us are not.
There you go. So, man, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Dude, I love hearing your story. I think that a lot of people can relate, you know, especially when you talk about back in, you know, 2008, 2009, you know, we hear the recurring themes all the time, people losing houses, losing money, losing cars, losing families. I mean, it's just, that was a bad thought.
Yeah.
That's insane. My house broke down in 2007, and I was almost homeless. You know,
yeah,
and it was bad to try to, even in the military, it was bad to try to bounce back from that. So I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show, man, and sharing your experience with us, sharing your book with us. You know, what it's about, and I think that people are going to actually relate to your story more than you think.
Yep. Yeah, when I talk about it with people, It connects with people because everyone's had some component of challenge in their life. And my hope with the book and everything that I do is it inspires people to take control of their life and get their time back so they can live the life that they want to live. So thank you so much, Sean, for this opportunity to chat with you today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, not a problem. So this is the point of the show where we do a shameless plug. You can plug your friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, favorite movie, give a shout out, whatever you want. This is your time to shop.
People can go to breakfastleadership.com and they can get a free copy of my How to Start Your Days Right, a successful morning, a checklist basically on being consistent in your day. Because if you have a consistent start to your day is going to be better. And probably my favorite movie is The Dark Knight. I'm a Batman guy.
No, you know what? I have an issue with people who say that The Dark Knight was the best movie of them, because I just think that Jack Nicholson was a better Joker. I just do. Not the story, but just how he played it, I think, was better.
Nicholson captured the Joker character like the Joker character was created. I will definitely give you that. Ledger's portrayal was definitely more along the lines of Batman meets A Clockwork Orange. It was a little little dark. It was very dark for me. The reason why I liked that movie is it was just he was just really getting under the skin of Batman, and just when he thought he could get him, he couldn't. Now in the comics, you know, and even you know the '60s TV show, you know, Batman always got the Joker. He was pretty easy to catch, and you know, wasn't as many challenges. Where this one was like, it was like, okay, I'm trying to get him and I can't. I'm trying to catch him and I can't. He's one step ahead of me. So you know that was one of the things that I really liked about the movie. Plus, they filmed a lot of it in Chicago, so all the streets I recognized when I worked there, and it was like, oh yeah, Lower Wacker Drive. Yeah, I've been in there a few times, and not driving that fast, of course, I like that series. They did a really good job with it. But yeah, I will definitely give you, you know, Jack Nicholson did an absolutely epic portrayal of that character.
This
will date me, but I remember when they announced Michael Keaton was going to play Batman, and there was actually. Yeah. And I remember, you know, there was a petition people were writing. It's like, how in the world could you put him as Batman? And no one could get it. And then I think it might have been Fangoria magazine or another one of the magazines that used to came out. I was at the store and it was the first public image of Keaton as Batman. And I picked up the magazine, I looked at it, and I was blown away. I'm like, oh my, I didn't see this happening. And then of course you saw it and yeah, no, he nailed it. He did Bruce Wayne well, he did Batman very well. And most of the other movies, it was either one or the other, but never both. But yeah, he nailed it. So yeah, that Batman movie came out in 89. I saw that in the theater more times than I want to admit, but it was good. I had a blast with it.
There you go.
Now I'll probably go watch it again because I've got it on Blu-ray. So
I know, right? I don't know, man. It's a little substitute. You know what I mean? It's super good.
Yep.
But man, that's what I grew up with as a kid. I grew up watching stuff like that. You know, Michael Keaton and Beetlejuice. Your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today.
The best nugget I can give people is, and this goes back to my first career of accounting, really keep track of your time, how you spend it, because then you will see patterns of how many hours a day you're doing something instead of what you really want to do, because we all get the same 24, but there's a ton of knowledge in looking and seeing how you spend your time, and with little tweaks, I'm not talking gigantic transformation, little tweaks to things, it can have a dramatic impact in how your life goes going forward.
There you go, man. Love it. Dude, You rock, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been an amazing experience.
Well, thank you again, and thanks to everybody listening. I really appreciate you, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah. So you can contact Michael Levitt on Twitter. His website is breakfastleadership.com. Go to facebook.com/B, as a letter B, B Fast Leadership. Instagram, his podcast.